Take a seat.
These may go to the board.
Okay, you need to get permission.
It is now 1:30, and we have reconvened our agenda. And at this time, we will cover public forum items. Do we have any other speaker cards beyond the ones that were submitted to Mr. Packard? Public forum?
Two things. They said they got your permission.
Okay, so I'm... None of these gets... Oh, yeah, they're stopped.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair? I just wanted to check in about the information that's being distributed right now. The enumerated, I'm not sure what the title of the piece of paper is. What's the name of that? Yes, what's the name of the document that you just distributed, Harvey? No, that's not right. This information was emailed, electronically provided to you because it was submitted electronically by Monday at noon. And he just asked if he could make sure that you had a printed copy so you're not getting something that you haven't seen before or hasn't been distributed properly. The other item was provided today by Mr. Schimmick, who I believe you have a card for, so.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
Okay. So I get it, the information from Mr. Schimmick, which had been electronically sent.
No, there's two different pieces of paper. The first one is a letter, and that was that's being handed out right now. So that may have been some of the confusion because you didn't have that in front of you. That was submitted earlier electronically.
Okay.
And you received it electronically earlier as well. The second piece of paper is that Schimmick just provided us, and that is this kind of little chart.
Okay. I'm now closing public comment, speaker cards, and I will start with Mr. Patrick McGibney. Go ahead.
This has a green light on it, so I think it's probably going to be okay. I don't want to overdo it here. Is that all right?
Yes, please.
Volume-wise? Okay.
Proceed.
My name is Patrick McGibney. I am the chair of the executive board of the local chapter of the Sierra Club. I'm also a resident of Los Osos. I'd like to thank you for your basin plan update last November. We appreciate that you engaged the parties in a very informative discussion and that you recognized our hard work in boiling down the 350-page basin plan and the 40-page stipulated judgment to a few questions and concerns. I'd like to update you on the progress in obtaining answers to the 16 questions which we submitted last November meeting, which I believe you have a handout of right now. Mr. Weimer asked about the questions after the first and the second meeting of the BMC and was told that they were in the works, so they are being answered. But we didn't hear anything for several weeks, so about 2 weeks ago we engaged Rob Miller, the interim executive officer, and sent him the questions with some slight edits. We decided that we'd focus on two related questions we thought were critical to address and that several board members also felt might require a more urgent response. We added these to the back of the page of the 16 questions, which you do have in front of you. We've decided to focus on these two questions. Rob said that he would write the answers and that they would be discussed on the February 17th Basin Management Committee meeting, after which we would receive responses in writing. And we look forward to that discussion and plan to submit follow-up questions if needed to explain in more detail our concerns to the parties at that meeting. I just want to touch on one of the issues of concern to your board, and that deals with the fact that there is no required metering or monitoring of private wells. And I think that was Mr. Young's concern that he expressed. As you recall, Supervisor Gibson defended mandatory monitoring. But the stipulated judgment not only lacks provisions for a county ordinance to require monitoring, but it prohibits the parties from requiring the county to enact one. And you can see by the second question on the back of the 16 questions that I handed you, that it raises issues regarding how the parties are able to assume other groups which have private wells will pump less, allowing them, the parties, to pump more of the sustainable yield. Here's what the basin plan says, and I quote, "The basin plan relies on estimates of historical and current groundwater extraction by private domestic, community facility, and agricultural water use. In the future, it will be critical to base management on the basin of accurate extraction data rather than estimates," end of quote. And closing up, I'd like to just say also that Mr. Yates says it appears that it appears there is an uncertainty of at least 100 acre feet in the amount of private domestic pumping that was used in the CWAT model, and the 100 acre feet uncertainty is just in one group of private well users, the private domestic group, and that estimate is now up to use 200 acre feet. And we request that an update of the basin plan in your July meeting will be given and explain concerns that we have not resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker card is Mr. Keith Weimer.
Weimer,
I apologize.
No, it's okay.
I should know by now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Keith Weimer. I'm the chair of the Water Committee of the local chapter of the Sierra Club. First, I want to thank you for the Basin Plan update in November. I want to stress that we raise concerns in support of the party's efforts so that the basin plan is effective in restoring the basin as soon as possible. We did electronically give you some of those concerns that we passed out last November. It looks like this. I want to also bring to your attention that this document, Measuring What Matters, it's a document published by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and it outlines elements of a strong adaptive management plan for effective sustainable groundwater management. It reinforces most of the points we make on that document. We believe the parties will resolve our concerns as they implement the plan, and we agree that they should have time to work out the details. I would like to briefly show two concerns, however, with one picture: the need for a clear objective and a protective, sustainable yield, both of which are supposed to result in no significant or unreasonable, undesirable effects, according to the Union of Concerned Scientists. If you pump at the level of the sustainable yield, you will end up, according to the basin plan, at the line that's furthest inland, and that's further inland than seawater intrusion is now. It allows chloride levels actually to go up in some wells because it sets a maximum limit of 250 milligrams per liter, and wells are well below that in some areas now. The targeted chloride metric of 100 milligrams per liter would not be reached. This also doesn't stop seawater intrusion in the very deep aquifer, and it allows salt buildup in internal parts of the basin, according to Gus Yates. On the other hand, if you pump it 20% below the sustainable yield, you end up at the line offshore. That's where the front would be. And you reach the chloride metric. Seawater intrusion stops in the aquifer and in the deep aquifer, and the closed basin condition is mostly taken care of. The first immediate goal of the basin plan is to halt or, to the extent possible, reverse seawater intrusion. The one onshore halts it, but there are undesirable effects. We're concerned that the stipulated judgment refers only to halting seawater intrusion and does not mention the 20% reduction, and even allows the potential to exceed the current sustainable yield with allocations. Of course, we support a clear objective that avoids undesirable effects with a strong adaptive program. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Mr. Steve Chemek.
Good afternoon, everyone. Steve Chemek, Executive Director of the Otter Project in Monterey Coast Keeper. Thank you for your service. I have two topics, so I'm going to go really fast. Water quality data and the ag order. First of all, the water quality data. I'm involved in a lot of things, as you guys probably could expect. Those include the comments on toxicity and sediments, the ag order, flows in the Salinas River, water quality in the Blanco drain and reclamation ditch, and groundwater management. All those require water quality data. For years now, that data has not existed. If you look at the handout that I just showed you, the last data input on the second page, the last data available through your system is June 2012. That is 3 years ago. And then if you look at the data that is available, you will see it's only the five-year data, well, a little bit more than that, but it does not include all the cooperative monitoring program data. Look, you guys, the data is essential for the work that I do. It's essential for the work that you do. You're not providing that data to the public. That is my right. This needs to be fixed. There's lots of reasons. First of all, you guys have turned over some of the implementation to CDEN. And second, you're creating a new portal, data portal. Those all become excuses if I do not have access to data for 3.5 years. 3.5 years. Second issue, the ag order. As you know, I've led a broad coalition that sued the state board over the over regulation of agricultural discharges. We won that lawsuit. That lawsuit anticipates that there will be a new ag order in March 2017, 1 year from now. Also, you should know that that is the natural expiration date of the order. We see no reason why you should not be working towards that date. You could say, oh, the lawsuit is being appealed, but look, here's my emotional appeal to you. People's lives and careers have been changed due to the ag order. You need to get back into the normal course of business in evaluating that order. The Central Valley and LA are developing ag orders, regardless of our lawsuit against the state for not regulating. Why aren't you? The natural expiration is March 2017. Boy, I'm really asking you to work towards that date. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Nope.
Wow.
Thank you, Mr. Chemek.
A question I have. Are we going to hold questions till the end?
Yeah, why don't we do that if you don't, if that's fine. Okay with you?
Yes.
Mr. Chuck Sassina, please. Sassina, thank you.
Sassina.
Good afternoon. My name's Chuck Cicinia. I'm representing myself as a private citizen in Los Osos. And I want to say thank you for the update last November from the Basin Management Committee. And in listening to the transcription from that meeting, I was struck by a common theme there. It seemed to resonate through the whole meeting, and that was the parallel universes that we talked about. Mr. Young, you talked about metering and monitoring of wells. And we heard county council and county supervisor tap dance and hem and haw about why it would be a good thing, could, should, but in the end, no, we're not going to. We don't see the potential for increased agricultural use. We just don't think we're going to go there. But it would be a good thing, and it's in the basin plan to do it. Mr. Delgado, you talked a lot about the correlation between current use, allocation, what triggers new development, that kind of thing. That's where we specifically heard about the two universes from Mr. Saperstein, the operational universe and the framework universe. The framework being the plan, we've got theoretical models, all these good things. The operational universe being what the chloride metrics, what the water level metrics actually are in the wells. Two different universes. And he even said the operational universe is the important one. So we have a plan, but that's not success yet. That's just the framework. Mr. Johnston, you talked about the 1,000 homes and what would trigger that sort of new development and what would happen there. And that's where we heard from the county supervisor about the three elements that would satisfy the Coastal Commission. The Habitat Conservation Plan, a sustainable groundwater management plan, and then folding both of those into the local coastal plan. The first one is the one that bothers me because that's where the parallel universe comes in, demonstrating a sustainable groundwater management plan. That's not demonstrating an adequate water supply. I guess my whole point is that there are still things to be done. We have a plan. Thank you for keeping your eyes on this. I'd like an update in July because the first annual report from the Basin Management Committee will be out by then. In the meantime, please consider asking the county to reallocate the $2 million that they have in conservation funding. I know the coastal permit says indoor. They could make it outdoor. Coastal Commission won't care. Maybe if you encourage them, that little change could help. There's also the coastal development permit that you'll hear about in a moment that talks about maximizing benefits to the basin with the reuse of water. But the first two contracts dump nearly 20% of the effluent to a dryland farmer. No benefit to the basin. Parallel universes. We could do this. This is what's happening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Richard Mergetson, please.
Richard Mergetson, the last time we were here, we asked you to consider writing a letter to the Coastal Commission about the 140 acre feet going to dry land farmers. Mr. Gibson, in his response, said, well, we probably should have the condition before us, you know, when we get into discussion of that. I actually have the condition. I'm going to read it for you. And when I'm reading it, think about dryland farmers receiving water that has zero mitigation factor for seawater intrusion, zero. And that's not my opinion. That's what the studies say by the experts, not me. Condition 5, Los Osos Basin Recycled Water Management Plan. Prior to construction of the project, the permittee shall submit two copies of the Los Osos Basin Recycled Water Management Plan, called the Basin Plan, to the Executive Director for review and approval. The objective of the plan shall be to ensure that implementation of the project, including sites designated for disposal of the treated effluent, is accomplished in a manner designed to maximize long-term ground and surface water and related resource, including wetlands, streams, creeks, lakes, riparian corridors, marshes, etc., health and sustainability, including with respect to offsetting seawater intrusion as much as possible. within the Los Osos groundwater basin. I want to know how zero mitigation factor for seawater intrusion for almost 20% of the effluent has any impact of maximizing that use of that treated effluent. And then condition 97, which actually talks about the recycle plan, where the water is going to go. 97C, agricultural reuse overlying the Los Osos groundwater basin, and total agricultural reuse shall not be less than 10% of the total treated effluent. Disposal shall be prioritized to reduce seawater intrusion and retain water in the Los Osos groundwater basin. Highest priority shall be given to replacing potable water uses. Dumping water on dryland farmers is not sustaining a basin. When we're talking 20% and those contracts are locked in for 5 years, I don't understand why this agency can't communicate with another agency about your concerns about this condition. You know, can I just finish? It'll only be a few seconds. Look what happened in Flint, Michigan. You don't think the people there would have wished that some of the agencies had communicated a lot sooner? This condition is going to have a very adverse impact on this basin for the next 5 years. It needs to be corrected. It needs to be corrected now.
Thank you for your comment. And the last speaker card is Abby Taylor Silva and Kay Mercer.
Good afternoon. We've requested a little more time just to update you on a few issues today, so thank you for that. I am Abby Taylor Silva with the Grower Shipper Association, and this is Kay Mercer of KMI. She's a consultant to various growers and landowners in the region. She's also a pro bono consultant to GSA. And I've asked Kay to join me today as she brings some valuable on-the-ground perspective and experience, and we welcome your questions following these comments. Quickly on compliance, Kay specifically requested that staff present compliance statistics to the board in late summer of 2015. It was our understanding that these would be presented at this meeting, and we'd appreciate an update on when these will be presented. Agriculture is currently resubmitting its concerns about the degree of rework that is being requested in the annual compliance and total nitrogen applied forms, so that you're aware. And agriculture is concerned that efforts at meeting continuous rework and resubmission requirements are preventing growers from taking other actions. Monies are being diverted, energy is being expended, and time is being wasted updating reports. I also wanted to speak briefly to the regional board's organizational chart. We recently noticed that the board's chart had been updated and republished. We've learned from staff that this chart is updated by the staff and the board is not involved in that update. However, we just want to make sure that the board is aware that we are concerned with the organizational chart and that it was recently updated to include new titles that read Site Cleanup Program / Irrigated Lands Regulatory. While we understand that the reallocation of staff time was done over a year ago, we just recently found this updated org chart, and it was updated as of January 6th of this year. And we're concerned because merging site cleanup and irrigated lands together looks like the irrigated lands program is now becoming more focused on a point source approach. And we are planning to discuss this further with staff now that we've learned that this is a staff update. But we also noticed that there is no longer reference to non-point source nor a watershed management initiative in the document. And we're a little concerned that the regional board may be moving away from a non-point source approach. And with the Sustainable Management Act coming before us, we must all be focused on watershed planning and management. And we're not finding that in the org chart. Next, I want to speak to the SALTS model. And we've expressed writing significant concerns about the general nature of the Salinas River SALTS model that was finalized last fall. So there's concern that the general information used for this model does not portray real-life conditions. In our view, and as if we expressed in writing, the analysis has major gaps, is overly generalized, and since the proposed application of the analysis is unknown, it doesn't really have a practical application for land management. Additionally, since the analysis is being applied to watersheds that are not listed for SALTS, one has to ask, what is its purpose, and how can it ever be utilized appropriately? We're concerned about the ultimate use of the model and how the general assumptions in it might be misconstrued and misused in the future for unintended uses by both regulatory and other groups. We also find it odd that there were insufficient funds to write an executive summary, and consequently the purpose and content of the document is not very clear. Considering the amount of money awarded in this grant, it would seem that there should have been an executive summary. And it appears that anything the authors might not have wanted to address, Tetra Tech, who wrote the summary, or wrote the report, simply called it policy and regulatory and passed by. That might have been an appropriate response from Tetra Tech, but there would be an expectation that at some point the regional board should be held accountable for those issues. And just to give you an example of some of the issues that we brought up in our letter, this model was packaged as benefiting ag water quality. However, most growers in the region are not using surface water for irrigation purposes, so we're not sure who's going to benefit from this model. There's a concern about the appropriateness of mixing a surface water TMDL for salts with groundwater modeling, and this was expressed by various stakeholders in different sessions about this. The entire Australia River was added to the model, but was not figured into the final analysis. The quick turnaround time was so quick that it was released on July 24th with final comments expected August 5th. That did not give us time to provide third-party in-depth analysis from technical consultants. The model didn't do any kind of comparative analysis of today's conditions versus historical conditions, and the document was focused on problems and doesn't address actions that have been taken by the agricultural community and other communities to address salts loading. And if data were not readily available, and this could be irrigation, crop distributions, rotations, then they were mostly ignored, even though we're concerned that this model could be used as an attempt to regulate irrigation in the future. So we remain unclear about the purpose of this model. We're unclear about who the primary audience is. And we've asked that Tetra Tech please give specifics on how it would be used. We noted that a model needs specificity in order to have value, and the request was ignored. So we also requested in our letter that since we've not been told how the model will be used, we've asked that the regional board provide us the opportunity to submit a final letter of comment that will be attached to the document, noting our misgivings with the model as it was created without a final use in mind. And that's my request for you today. Additionally, I wanted to speak quickly about sediment. As you know, the proposed TMDL for sediment toxicity and pyrethroid pesticides in the Lower Salinas River watershed was released by staff this week. We've been speaking to Peter Martins on your staff about this issue for many months, and he's been very helpful. We've appreciated the opportunity to provide feedback on this issue. Sediment toxicity is a serious concern, and we support a process that addresses this impairment through thorough analysis and evaluation of intended outcomes and unintended consequences. We're very interested in being a part of the solution, but unfortunately, we don't believe that the TMDL program as presented is going to address sediment toxicity. More needs to be known about the toxicants, the degree and mode of transport in order to allocate loads and to select appropriate practices. More also needs to be known about the varying levels of sedimentation in subwatersheds in order to determine where system vulnerabilities exist. More effort also needs to be made to understand the practicability and effectiveness of various management practices, and we strongly recommend that staff pause the current TMDL trajectory and initiate some more productive discussion about how to properly steward pyrethroid pesticides and how to address sediment toxicity at the watershed level. We think this needs a bigger watershed focus because it feeds into a larger stormwater component, and we're concerned that those concerns are not being taken into consideration with this TMDL. And in closing, I just wanted to note that you know, it's always good to step into another person's shoes. And I've recently been appointed to a local agency. And in that, I have a renewed understanding for how challenging it can be to review hundreds of pages of information with very little time in preparation for a meeting, and then vote on an issue that affects our communities, their people, the environment, and the businesses that drive our economy. I have a renewed appreciation for the job that you do. And I'm also with that keenly aware of how important it is to investigate what your decisions mean and what my decisions mean, and follow up with staff and stakeholders and stay engaged after decisions are made at the dais. Excuse me. Recent decisions and initiatives by this board are having widespread ramifications. They're affecting land values, they're disrupting relationships between landowners and tenants, and these situations are leading to questions about the value of problem-solving efforts. In many cases, trust is eroding, and the word collaboration is perceived as being overused and having little meaning. I'm making a renewed commitment myself to engage with board members to speak about concerns and successes, such as our continued work on the Salinas River, and I'm happy to say the permits were filed this last week. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and I will be following up, and we will continue to be speaking to you in your public comments about various ag issues. Thank you.
You have another minute.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
I don't have much to add. I just want to encourage the board and the staff to continue to look at solutions rather than just regular, actual on-the-ground solutions, collaborations, working on actual ways to improve water quality. I'm working with growers right now. I can assure you all we're doing is pumping out paper. The rework, the technical reports, the other initiatives that are coming down, it's pretty hard to carve out time and budgets for actual on-the-ground work. And this resides largely here and here. It's not a grower issue. They're the ones that are being directed, rework this, write this technical report. And my concern is it's not solution focused, it's just enforcement and regulatory focused. Thank you.
Thank you to both of you. And let's see, I know some of our board members had a couple of questions, but before addressing any question or clarification you had on Los Osos, I would like Ms. Lisa McCann to clarify, you know, our operating boundaries associated with Los Osos and the basin.
That's actually part of the executive officer's report, and simply what that says, and I think it'd be more appropriate to talk more about it then, but specifically that it's really state board. It's the county has some role and responsibility for implementation of the plan. The Basin Management Committee is leading that, and the State Water Resources Control Board is the operating authority under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act in approving, disapproving, and setting expectations and objectives and guidelines for what makes an appropriate plan and an appropriate groundwater sustainability agency.
Okay.
And
thank you. Yeah, because there's a little overlap on some of the topics that were discussed in public comment and actually reflecting item 14, I noticed. So that's why I wanted to bring this up. So, you know, we also have an understanding of some of our internal limitations. So I'll start here on my left. Mr. Young?
I just had a question for Mr. Shimmick with the two-page screenshot that he gave us. This data is invertebrate survival in water.
Yes, that's what I looked at.
Is that data that the water board has?
Yes.
That is not being released?
Well, so toxicity studies are part of the Cooperative Monitoring Program data set. So the Cooperative Monitoring Program data set is not there.
Okay. Karen probably has an answer
to
this.
Yeah, and I think she does. And, okay. And my issue isn't about the delays. And frankly, I've been a supporter of the CCAMP program forever. My plea is that we need the data. We need to move ahead because,
Okay. Could we have Ms. Yeah. Wooster clarify where the data is?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Dr. Wolf, members of the board. So there are at least two issues going on that I'd like to just briefly address. One, it's rather timely that Steve brought this up because we are about ready to release, hopefully Monday, but certainly this week, a new version of our website. We've spent the last year reworking the software and fully auditing the data. That said, what our website has in it is what is made to us, what available to us through the seed-in process. So in the olden days, before 2012, we did all the data management here at our agency. And so we fed the website directly. In 2012, we changed the way we manage our data so that it is uploaded through data centers to the seed-in database, at least in theory. And there's been a major bottleneck there, as I think you've all heard about. Some portion of that is related to the transition up at Swamp that Steve Moore alluded to earlier. However, that happened in 2012. The only reason there is 2012 data in this database is because we made a decision to load it up front before it went through their checking process because we wanted to make it available. But we do a risk in that it hasn't gone through their QA process. So we're waiting for the 2013 and 14 data to go through that process. It is being loaded now. It's starting to flow. So the website update that we will have up hopefully Monday will reflect what's in seed-in at this point, and things are seeming to be breaking loose up there. So that's good. And I just also want to mention for the newer board members that we're the only region in the state that has anything close to this capability for viewing data. The website is actually hosted by our partner nonprofit, the Bay Foundation, and we have invested quite a bit in software development to make our data highly available. So we have actually a lot more utility to view data than most other regions. And but I hear Mr. Shimmick's frustration, but I really do think that we're gonna start seeing things moving more quickly now. They've been making a lot of changes and it's been a difficult process.
Thank you for shedding a little extra light on what's coming in the future. And any time or horizon, not to tie you down, but are we talking about a few months from now?
They've loaded portions of the 2013 and 14 data already, so that will show up in the website update. We just pulled data from their database last week, so what we will have is as available as you know we can get. But they're not doing it in a linear fashion necessarily. It's sort of chunks of data, so we'll have some parts of the data up through 2014, but not all of it. They're handling a lot of different projects sort of simultaneously, so hopefully the flow will continue. I think they're working their way through a lot of their problems, and we've had really great responsiveness from our cooperative monitoring program folks that are doing the data delivery. They've been really highly responsible in addressing the issues of concern.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you.
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. I just have a single question regarding the Los Osos issue. It was unfortunate that I was not able to attend the November hearing, and I missed a good part of that update. However, Just, I understood that there were a number of board questions that were raised, and I saw that item 14 contains some response to, I'm guessing, some of the more urgent questions that were raised by the board. I was curious, was there any direction from the board to bring this back? Is there an update that was requested at some point in the future?
This is the feedback. The board directed staff to answer those questions, mm-hmm. and staff has answered those questions, and these are part of item 14.
I just want to clarify, the questions that are in the executive officer's report, item 14, which we will talk about then, are not questions that the board members provided or claimed were urgent. They are questions that the stakeholders and Mr. McGibney from the Sierra Club brought forward, and after discussion, the board directed us to please respond to the stakeholders' questions publicly so that you could see the responses.
Okay, so I think the one thing that isn't clear to me is this is a recap. The list we got today is a recap with 16 questions, but I know we didn't provide answers to 16. So if, you know, how that selection was made, I'm not clear.
I think that they would have to answer that question. They're the ones who shortened the list and gave us the five or six points to address. I believe the 16 questions you have are from a former letter.
Okay.
That they're working on in a different forum through the Basin Management Committee.
Yeah, that helps me. Now I understand what the process was. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. One of them was relating to, I guess, the optics of, you know, having site cleanup and ag order together. You know, certainly realize sometime the category we use is based on, you know, staff resources, et cetera, but I call it the optics. You know, I could see where an agriculturist who is a good steward of the land would not like to be viewed as a site cleanup. So is there any way we could be split as a 1.1 and 1.2 or some creative way like that, Mr. Johnson?
Robertson.
I'm sorry.
He blended my names, but I'll go by that. I'm the person responsible for that. You can talk to me, Abby. So about a year and a half ago, actually about 2 years ago, we took a look at the ILRP or Ag program. And at that point in time, we thought that the workload associated with that was too big for one senior to handle, trying to make jobs manageable and look at long-term career and physical health of our employees. And so we split that into two. One is the groundwater component, and one is more the implementation of the order itself, more surface water related and practice related. The fraction that was split off that is groundwater related did not comprise enough staff to make a whole unit. So I added a couple of site cleanup staff to the senior's responsibility. There's no implication by the fact that those two subunits are together with respect to some future strategy or anything like that. We're trying to make manageable units, mm-hmm. healthy manageable units for our seniors.
No, I
get your point about optics.
Yeah, I appreciate, you know, the logic, and I figured it had to do with staff resource, Mr. Robertson, but is, you know, could something like a little parenthesis or,
right.
you know, just a little yeah. word there that would
maybe
establish
we just say
the distinction?
Groundwater or something like that.
Yeah.
We're trying to be informational a little bit with our org charts too, so that if somebody from an industrial site that is being, like the Guadalupe oil field, for example, that does also fall into that group, supervision of that, that they would look at our org chart and it would be informative to them. Whereas if I just said something sort of generic like groundwater, it wouldn't be informative to mm-hmm. somebody from an industrial cleanup site to look at our org chart.
Okay.
Dr. Wolf, can I add a couple comments?
Yes.
My understanding, and I will verify this, is that Administrative Services and Human Resources at the State Water Resources Control Board requires us to name our units and sections so they identify the actual programs as they're known. Sometimes it sounds like jargon, but as they are known to the agency. That has limited us, and there was a time, you might recall, that we had different names on our sections. For example, we had a groundwater protection section, we had a watershed planning and protection section, and then we lost some of those words when we were all told to use the same language across the regions and at the state board. However, it would be a great question to ask, and I would support it completely if we can add or change names so that they are more understandable to anybody that's not, doesn't know the names of our programs and that jargon. And I did speak with Abby about this previously, and very supportive of trying to make it more understandable and address different interpretations of what is simply organizational labels for us.
Some, you know, not, I don't want to take undue amount of time, but something to look at, maybe see what, I don't know, what Region 5 does in their org chart.
They're so massive that they have whole units related to ag. We're much smaller in that respect, so we have to splinter.
Well, thank you for the clarification, John. And then the other quick item is on the Tetra Tech report and model. Maybe some of these issues have been addressed, or I don't want to take a lot of time in this meeting here, but it sounded somewhat, you know, it requires some follow-up.
I don't know if Jennifer, because she supervises Peter Mearns, maybe Matt, who's in the room, could, are you have some familiarity with the results of the model?
And if you don't have the answer now, I mean, it's, you know, it's just something that can be addressed, but I guess there's some...
Clearly, I don't have the responses. You know, I'm familiar with the contract, but I haven't seen the outcome, and I don't know what the...
Well, why don't, you know, maybe we can review that some other time. I don't want to take...
Maybe we could just put a little blurb in the executive officer's report for the next meeting, if that's acceptable.
That's totally fine.
Okay.
That's a good
idea.
We'll
do that.
Thank you.